Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, name 800, Sulochana. Su, as we have heard in several names just previously, such as Sundara and Sunda, is an upasarga, a prefix, which means good or very increased. Lochana means eyes, from the understanding that which sees, the ability to see. So, the beautiful eyes of the beautiful Supreme Personality of Godhead, or the beautiful eyed Supreme Personality of Godhead. We've just had the name Sundara, beautiful. And we've had Shvanga, all his bodily parts are beautiful. And this name is particularly focusing on the beauty of his eyes. There are names of the Supreme Lord which focus on the beauty of other parts of his body. Many names highlighting the beauty of his lotus feet. Lotus feet, Kamalacharan, for instance. His hands, Padmapani. His navel, Padmanabha, we just had just here, Ratnagarbha. This name is Sulochana, highlighting the beauty of the eyes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have already had here in Vishnu Sahasranam similar names, Pushkaraksha, Pundarikaksha, Aravindaksha, which all means lotus-like eyes, Mahaksha, great eyes, big eyes. We also have coming up 885 name, Ravilochana, eyes like the sun. And this is Sulochana, whose eyes are beautiful, bewitching, bewildering. Parashara Bhattar is commenting on this series of names, still for another 10 names, on the Buddha avatar, how the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Buddha cheated the demons. He explains, Sri Parashara Bhattar, Tata hridayalu chara lochana sulochanaha. He is called Sulochanaha because in his Buddha avatar, he had charming eyes which enticed the tender-hearted. So we've heard in so many ways, by the way he speaks, by the way he rubs his belly. In so many ways, he tricks and deludes. Sammohaya Sura Dvisha, we have in the Bhagavatam. Buddha Namnam Jana Sutta, Kikate Shu Bhavishyati, Tata Kalo Sampravritte. Vyasadeva says, toward the beginning of Kali Yuga, Buddha appears to Sammohaya, to seriously delude those who are envious of the demigods. he appears as the son of Anjana in the province known as Kikat. His eyes, it's another feature which enticed the tender-hearted. But wasn't it that Buddha appeared to stop those who are performing animal sacrifices? So that doesn't suggest tender-hearted. Well, it may be. It's a strange thing that people may have some very demoniac traits and still have some softness in some ways. Just like you'll see people who are, they don't think about it. Most people don't even think about it. With the aggressive vegan movement going on, they're forcing people to think about it more and more. But most people who eat meat, they don't think there's anything wrong in the pain and suffering that's gone into that little strip of meat that they're eating. But the same people who are they, it used to be that people would kill chickens themselves, keep chickens and kill them, or pigs, or whatever. Still, here in India up to the present day, you buy a live, not you who are listening probably, but it's common people, they choose a chicken from a bunch in a cage, and then the butcher just chops the head of the chicken off right in front of their eyes, or they may take the chicken home themselves to be even fresher and kill the chicken themselves. And they'll very affectionately feed that to their family members. There's a series of books which I first saw in the office of one of our devotees in Russia, actually. It's called Chicken Soup for the Soul. About 20 years ago, I suppose, the first of this series of books came out. So Chicken Soup for the Soul. And it's all stories of nice people who do nice things which they don't have to do, just to be nice to others. And in this way, they spread the milk of human kindness. And it's supposed to be inspirational, that by reading these stories, you also think, how can I be nice to others? And in this way, the world becomes a better place. The title is Chicken Soup for the Soul. So the idea, chicken soup. Why chicken soup for the soul? They don't know what the soul is, but why chicken soup? The idea is that your mother, very affectionate, it's a homemade thing. I suppose you don't usually get chicken soup in McDonald's or whatever. But your mother cooks it, and it's a home-cooked thing, and she feeds it to the family members, and it's symbolic of the selflessness of motherhood and the sharing between the family members and all that's good and nice and wonderful in life. So there you have it. There you have it. All that's nice and wonderful and endearing, and it's very nice. You can play some violin music and make you feel, how very nice. But it's not nice for the chicken. But people don't think about that, do they? So they may be soft-hearted in some ways, but have some demoniac tendency also. And it was to curb the demoniac tendency that Buddhadev appeared. And his charming eyes enticed the tender-hearted. And actually, enticing eyes, they do that. They can bewilder. They do bewilder. Even very powerful men are bewildered by the enticing eyes of a woman. Srila Prabhupada wrote in one purport that the great Caesar, the conqueror of so many lands, was conquered immediately by the eyes, just the movement of the eyes of one Cleopatra. So Buddha's eyes, you've seen deities of Buddha. Of course, there are some rather profane or irreverent statues of Buddha, but they're laughing Buddha. But that's common among Buddhists, the laughing Buddha. The idea that a Buddha is just laughing at everything. What is there to do but laugh? Although we don't find in the biographies of Buddhadev any such thing. Of course, the biography Lalita Vistar, that came out centuries after Buddha passed away. Anyway, there are many, many deities you'll see. So much of Southeast Asia, Thailand, of course, Sri Lanka, which is not exactly Southeast Asia, but Thailand. In Malaysia, I've seen, especially in Thailand, and you'll find that very grave, but the eyes are typical Buddha deities. Very extended eyes, the typical you could say, Indian iconography of very extended eyes with long, long part here. So it looks very charming and beautiful. So with the eyes, Buddhadev, that was also, it's a whole experience. The way he talks, what he talks, his renunciation, his wanting to communicate something, his humility, his beauty, his eyes, it's a whole experience. Just as we had with Srila Prabhupada, who had a very different message and mission to that of Buddhadev. But any what we can call charismatic person, the kind of person who just attracts people's attention. By qualities, it may be by extrovertness, or it may not be extroverted character. But unforgettable personality, powerful personality. So Buddhadev, one of the features of his powerful personality was his eyes. And remember that eyes, it's not just the shape of the eyes. Eyes are very powerful in communicating. It's said that Gladstone, toward the end of the 19th century, Gladstone was in and out of power as the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, which at that time was ruling much of the world. And it was said that in Parliament, in the Houses of Commons, the House of Commons, sorry, that just by his glaring, he would frighten an opponent of the opposite party. He would frighten them into submission. I don't know if you get away with that now in the House of Commons, but Gladstone did. He, just by his fierce look, he would put fear. Of course, he must have, the people who he cowered down must have known that if they tried to speak when he's looking so angry, he was quite capable of verbally cutting them to pieces also. But eyes are very indicative for seduction, for showing anger, all kinds of emotions, even ignoring people. Just I used to hear that devotees, this was long back in Hong Kong, devotees used to do office-to-office book distribution, and a common response was that the people they were trying to interest in the book would just act as if they weren't there, they weren't hearing them, they didn't see them, they wouldn't look at them. That's in Chinese, or at least that part of China, Hong Kong, the culture to just avoid people, don't look at them. So eyes are very expressive. And the beautiful eyes of Krishna. I'll go on one quote from Vishnu Purana that Parashara Bhatta gives. Punascha raktambara drik mayamoha ajitekshanaha. He was clad in crimson robes and had eyes which were unconquered. So you get the idea. His eyes were very strong and powerful also. And he deluded the minds of all by his maya. Okay, now let's get on to the beauty of the eyes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in other avatars, which bewilder in another way, but in a way that is uplifting and not taking us away from him. The amazing avatar of Buddha is that he took people away from Krishna, further away from Krishna. They're causing so much disturbance by supposedly representing the Vedic culture and making the path to Krishna completely confused. So better take them further away from Krishna. so they don't cause any more disturbance by posing themselves as followers of the Vedas. Better they come out openly and say, we're against the Vedas, rather than saying in the name of the Vedas that we are doing animal sacrifices, which was for the purpose of killing so many animals. So, the beauty of the Supreme Lord's eyes, so many statements are there in Shastra, how the eyes, they attract devotees toward him. The Buddha, his mission was to push the demoniac people. You get in your corner. You don't come in here. You don't come in the Vedic fold. You go, you be demons, clearly. Stop pretending to be followers of the Vedas. But the Supreme Lord's beauty, his beautiful eyes, they attract devotees close to him. It takes quite some qualification. Even to be able to see those eyes, inasmuch as we are recommended in Padma Purana to first, and Srimad Bhagavatam, to first meditate on the toes of the Lord, then the feet of the Lord, the ankles, then the calves and the knees and the thighs, and only gradually go up to his lotus eyes. And Padma Purana compares the Bhagavatam, the cantos, to first, second, third, to meditating and gradually going up. And the tenth canto, in the tenth canto, is like the smiling face of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada said we can hear the sound of Krishna's flute in the tenth canto of Bhagavatam. Shastra is there, and of course the devotees, they have their own realizations, which they've put into writing, mostly into verse, which is non-different from Shastra. Throughout the Divya Prabandhams, there are so many instances of praising the beauty, which includes the eyes of the Lord. Andal, in her pasurams, that means her verses, particularly praises the beauty of the Lord, because she is the wife of the Lord, so she's particularly attracted to his transcendental beauty. Here is a transcendental description of the Supreme Lord from one of the pasurams of Sri Andal. If you don't know who Andal is, that's a big story. She appeared as like an ordinary girl, but she married Sri Ranganatha Swami, and her physical form merged into the form of Ranganatha Swami at Sri Rangam. We see him as a deity. She saw him as the Supreme Lord. Pratima nahatumi shakat Brajendra Nandan. We find in Chaitanya Charitamrita the young Brahmin from Vijayanagar telling the deity Gopal, you're not a deity. You're directly the son of Maharaj Nanda. So Andal, she entered into his form. And in standard in temples of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, they have the temple of the Supreme Lord and a temple of Sri and of Andal also. So Andal, she says, for instance, she praises my sweet nectar who resides in Sri Rangam. He has beautiful hair, beautiful mouth, beautiful eyes, one from whose beautiful navel sprouts the beautiful lotus, the one who has subjugated me as his own by his beauty. So particularly thinking about the beauty of the eyes of the Lord, but it's part of a package. His whole beautiful, everything about him is beautiful, everything about him is sweet, everything about him is enchanting. Baladev Vidyabhushan gives a similar understanding. His eyes look beautiful, but he specifically says due to the reddish corners and elongated shape. Yeah, that elongated shape I was saying in the Buddha deity. We find in the Bhagavatam, 10th canto, that the gopis of Vrindavan, who are of approximately the same age of Yashoda Mai, they would come and complain to Yashoda. Oh, your naughty boy he's come in our house, he's smashed up all the milk and yogurt pots, fed it to the, made a big mess, fed it to the monkeys and made our children cry. But they also saw his eyes are fearful, rubbing his eye. We have in Damodar Ashtakam also. So they requested him, they didn't want him to become upset. So he's a bit of a cheater in that way also, because he knows he's guilty, but he's crying to try to get himself excused. So they were the eyes of Krishna made the very soft heart, soft as the butter they were churned. The eyes of Krishna charmed the hearts of the women of Vrindavan, so that even though Krishna should have been punished, they didn't want him to be punished. Beautiful eyes, at least in the robust culture I was raised in, maybe you call it patriarchal or whatever, male-oriented culture in which I was raised in, beautiful eyes are usually associated with women. We don't even use the word beauty much in relation to men at all. It's more like he's handsome, he's stocky. We'll use words like that. Strong, well-built. Those are compliments for the physical form of a male. But remember, Krishna is a softie. We just had that name, Sunda. He's very soft-hearted. And the whole concept of manliness in Vaishnava culture, Vedic culture, it's different to that of the ultra macho guy of the what is that, Rambo movies and all that kind of thing. It's not so extreme like that. Krishna can fight and kill, and he can play on his flute and entice the gopis. In Dwarka also, the same Krishna who fights and kills, he's a very good father, very good husband, very good father. We don't find him beating his 16,108 wives, and he doesn't beat any of them. Krishna, Krishna. His eyes are so attractive and luring, fascinating, that all the purified beings in the universe are attracted to him. But it requires purification. Otherwise, we might not even notice how beautiful Krishna is. Throughout the ages, there are different movie heroes, just like that Rambo was some series of movies, I believe. And I believe the star who played that, the actor who played the role, was Arnold something or other, Schwarzenegger, something like that. So he's one movie star, and then there have been so many before, and they get forgotten, and then there are others come up, and there must be someone else who's a big movie star now, and men stars, female stars, and I guess it's time they had some LB, whatever it is, LBGQT or something like that star, who looks attractive to other LG, whatever they are. But they come and they go. They're remembered for some time and then forgotten. Oh, little bit of trivia here. From the early 1980s in Dhaka, Bangladesh, our landlord, who spoke good English, which was unusual for Bangladeshis at the time, telling us with tears in his eyes about Greta Garbo and the movies he used to watch. Greta Garbo was some Swedish woman who went to Hollywood and became a big film star. How many heard of her? Who's heard of her? Lost in the winds of time, gone with the wind. But Krishna, he's not forgotten. His eyes don't become old and worn out and dull and gray. His eyes are eternally full of love and kindness and affection and compassion and tenderness and care and concern and bewitching beauty for those who are fortunate enough to be on that level of being attracted to Krishna in the role of a lover. It's not an ordinary thing to be in that role. But some see his eyes just like male and female. They just by looking at each other, human I'm talking about, they can just awaken the attraction between them. Just by looking at each other. So that's there with Krishna also. If someone is so fortunate to be so exalted that they can relate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the mode of male to female love. Anyway, we're not all going to be gopis. We are not all. There are gopis, gopas, cows. There are servants in Vrindavan. There's grass in Vrindavan. There's the wind in Vrindavan. There are trees in Vrindavan. And beyond Vrindavan, there's Dwarka, Mathura, Vaikuntha, Ayodhya. In all his forms, the eyes of the Supreme Lord. Very, very special part. Even everything about his body, Angani Yasya Sakalendriya Vrittimanti, all the parts of his body can perform all the functions, but still his eyes are singled out as being especially pleasing and attractive. Even for us, our eyes, they're essential. I mean, there are blind people who can operate in the world, but it's only by the grace of those who can see, because if we were all blind, mankind came out of Africa, right? Yeah, right. That's what they say. Well, if they're all blind, they wouldn't have got out of Africa. They'd all been eaten by all the lions, right? You need some eyes to be able to see. We say, I understand. We can say, I see. Seeing is given such importance. Seeing is believing. That is the presumption that in science you should be able to prove something means by seeing. Of course, it goes beyond that, but the initial idea, pratyaksha. Pratyaksha means direct evidence, but aksha specifically means eyes. So pratyaksha means direct experience. That can mean by hearing, by touching, by tasting, but the word is given, pratyaksha, indicating the eyes. In other words, visual evidence is considered the most strong, although of course there are optical illusions. But still, they say, seeing is believing. Doubting Thomas, he wouldn't believe that Jesus had come back from the dead. And then he just didn't believe it. When he saw, he believed. And he's ridiculed for that 2,000 years later, although probably most people would not believe it if you told someone came back from the dead. So, eyes are the portals through which we see and to a large extent understand the entire external world. Watch out! There's some danger, we say, watch out. We don't say, hear out. Or we say, look out. There's a golf ball coming. You're walking along and people are playing golf. That happened to me once when I was a kid. I was walking on a Boxmoor Common where it's converted into a golf course. It used to be for grazing cows and sheep. And it's a golf course. I was just walking one day and then, watch out! I looked up and there's a golf ball coming towards me. So I got out of the way. Otherwise, might not be here today to talk about all these things. So the eyes. Actually, Srila Prabhupada gave the example that when we're asleep, it's the ears that are alert. But in waking life, generally we look to see. It's different with for dogs. They see, but they perceive the world more from their sense of smell, so we're told, from dogologists or whatever the word may be, dog experts. But in human life, seeing is very, very important. And then the internal eye, antar-chakshu, the eye of knowledge. So Krishna helps to open the eye of knowledge. I'm not talking about the third eye here. I'm talking about the ability to perceive things as they really are. That is jnana-chakshu. We receive the eye of knowledge from Guru, who is empowered by Krishna to open our eyes. Agyanatimirandhasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam yena tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. We pray to the Guru as one who opens the eyes of us who are in the darkness of ignorance by applying the ointment of transcendental knowledge. So another meaning then of Sulochan is one who has wisdom, vision of the self, clear understanding of the self. Yes, for that we need the eye of knowledge, because we look and we see and we misunderstand the body to be the person. But one who has the eye of knowledge sees that it's not the body that is alive, but it's the self, the Atma, the Jiva within every body. So obviously this attribute is there in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And it may be in others also, but it's definitely with him. And therefore he's called Sulochana. Shobanam Lochanam. Lochanam here means nayanam, eyes. Atava jnanam atyeti sulochanaha. He who has splendid, auspicious knowledge is called sulochana. His knowledge is always correct and complete in all respects. It's also swatantra. His knowledge is not derived from seeing, touching, smelling, tasting, feeling. It's not from shravan mana nididhyasana, from hearing, contemplating, and internalizing. His knowledge is always existent with him. And it's all always completely clear. Our knowledge is always muddled up, and we always have the we can never be sure if we really know everything properly. That's why, in one sense, the academia is agnostic, means that in all fields of knowledge, no one in academia can claim to fully, completely know anything perfectly. Of course, some things, 2 + 2 = 4. If you're in the philosophy department, nothing goes, but some things are, many things. It's in science especially, they say that, yes, we know this, but what we know is subject to being refined or modified or possibly even completely superseded or retired by a better understanding. But Krishna is not like that. He's not. He knows everything perfectly and completely. So Sulochana, he sees everything perfectly. No one, and this is a Madhva Sampradaya understanding, because it's different in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. Even Lakshmi cannot fully understand him, because or the knowledge that he has. Now, of course, in Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, Lakshmi is on a footing, same footing as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, but Madhva see different. That's a major difference. And even what I'm saying, it's a simplistic statement, because there are so many nuances. But basically, that is a major difference between Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya understanding and that of Madhva Sampradaya. Sulochana, that means that he sees, and he sees in the best way. And therefore, they comment, is from Madhva Sampradaya, Vedvyas, Vishnu Avatar, he wrote so many books, or he gave us so much Vedic knowledge, but he only gave it according to the capacity or the caliber of the recipients, of their ability to understand it. So what's being said here is that even though we have various shastras, only that much is given to us as we can understand, because the knowledge of the Supreme Lord goes it's unlimited. We're given just a fraction, that's all. But for us, that is perfect and what we get is perfect and complete. Just like, for instance, in Bhagavatam, that's this topmost shastra, but actually that's developed more in the writings of the Goswamis about the pastimes of Vrindavan. It's given in a summary manner in the Bhagavatam, and without going much into the intricacies of the intimacy, which is not it's not meant for everyone. It's the writings of some of the writings of Rupa Goswami, especially they're very intimate. So it's not meant for everyone. So another feature of the greatness of his knowledge is that he gives as much as we can handle. Although the depth of his knowledge is not known to anyone else. Now, Shankara, I didn't go to, what did Shankara Acharya say? Getting back to his beautiful eye, yeah, it's similar. He gives the meaning of beautiful eyes and who has superior wisdom. So, yeah, we're covering that. And then, with his eyes, he sees everything, everywhere, inside and outside. He sees what's in our hearts. We can't do anything privately and secretly and think no one can see us, because Krishna always sees everything we're doing. He knows the purpose of the creation, and by his eyes, he sees, he directs. He sees everything that's going on at all times and all places of everyone. Past, present, and future. He all sees simultaneously. And he also gives everyone else the ability to see. We can see because he sees, and he gives that ability to us. The sun and the moon are considered his eyes. Sashi Surya Netram, we have in the Gita, in the description of the Vishvarupam, the universal form. It's two eyes. Without the sunlight or moonlight, without the assistance of light, we cannot see. So he gives us all facility to see. So in this way, he shares his ability to see with others. And that is a summary of the name Sulochana. Now, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, the blessings of the Vaishnavas, I've been through discussing 800 names of the 1,000 names of Lord Vishnu, and I pray for the mercy of the Vaishnavas and of Srila Prabhupada that I may be able to share with you and purify myself by doing so another 200 names of Vishnu Sahasranama. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. Dante nitaya chunakang padayo nipatya kritva chakaku shatameta daham ravimi he sadhava sakala eva vihaya durat gauranga chandra charane kurutanu ragaha. Parivadatu jano yata tata va nanu mukaro navayang vicharayamaha. Hari rasa madira madati matta bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.